Daily news, breaking updates, and exclusive podcasts. iTricks.com.
Hello and welcome to the Magic Week in Review, bringing you news, rumor, and culture reports from the front lines of the magic industry. I'm Justin Robert Young, and in this, the November 15th, 2009 edition of the program, we'll tell you about Keith Barry, David Blaine, David Copperfield, as well as the new research into magic and autism. But joining me to speak on all of this and much, much more is, how can I even just list the accolades? Most recently, you can see his articles appear in Bizarre Magazine. Easily one of my favorite guests on this podcast, Simon Drake. How you doing, buddy?
Hello, Justin. That's very kind of you. Thank you.
Come on.
Nice to talk to you again.
Now, why is it that when right before we start recording, you're all up and energetic, and now when we are recording on the podcast, you're low and brooding?
Well, I took my pills for my autism.
And now you have X-ray magic eyes, as all autistic children do.
Oh, yeah, X-ray eyes.
That's it. They can see through any method. The autistic children. Who knew?
Well, that's a weird story, because autism is associated quite often with brilliance, you know. But I don't know if it's something to do. You don't think you have to be brilliant to suss out magic tricks. It's like, you know, when Geller was doing all that stuff, he fooled all those very, very clever scientists.
Yeah.
Because they think complicatedly. You have to think very simply, I think, to understand how tricks are done.
Absolutely. And we will get into that story a little bit later in the podcast. But first, I would like to remind everybody that, listen, there were book tests before, but there was never a book test like the Dracula Book Test 2.0, which you can pick up at TrickShopMagic.com. Again, TrickShopMagic.com is your place to pick up what is being hailed as the best book test to ever be created, and one that, if it were in physical combat with other book tests, would spill their blood and stand at the heap of all others that defied it. Pick it up at TrickShopMagic.com. Of course, TrickShopMagic.com is your number one online shop. If you want that brick-and-mortar experience, then go to Sam Blankenship, TrickShopMagic.com. Your brick-and-mortar experience, one click at a time. Simon, our first story this week is Keith Barry, who went out on a limb this weekend and decided to predict the match between Ireland and France in World Cup soccer qualifying, soccer here in the United States. Unfortunately, he was wrong.
Do you know what the score was, and what did he say?
He said it was it was going to be 2-1 Ireland.
And?
And it turned out to be 0-1 France.
Okay.
So,
but he was way out.
So he was, number one, the first he also predicted the first person to score for Ireland. I forget his name right now, but he didn't score at all because nobody scored for Ireland. And that was it. And they lost 1-0.
I know a guy who makes a living from betting on football games, on soccer games.
Uh-huh.
And he's a mathematician. And the odds for him are he literally can win. He doubles his money every month, never any more. He doubles his money, what he puts in, but that's it. He doesn't ever make massive money. It's over lots of games, and it's a formula that he's worked out. It's mathematical.
Yeah.
And, maybe our friend Keith got himself an Irish formula there.
And I hope Irish formula in quotes or italics, so it's suitably read as dismissive.
I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine, but I mean, he's guessing.
Well, no. And let me just fill you in on the backstory here. Now, Barry predicted correctly on a radio show a few months ago, I believe it was May of this year, a rugby match. And that was absolutely correct down to the score. He predicted the score, I believe, would be 3-1. It turned out, because rugby scores are higher. It was whatever the rugby score was. He predicted it on the nose, as well as the winner. So now in terms of public predictions, He is 1-1. But let me ask you this. As a mentalist, do you think this hurts his reputation since it is a public kind of out there prediction?
I'd say it discredits his reputation somewhat, but I don't know. I'm not really a mentalist.
Yeah, but you are familiar with the concept of mentalism, right?
little bit, but I mean, not much. It's not really my game. But yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Because sometimes, like in magic in general, you know, failing once helps the effect, right? I mean, it kind of makes it seem more legitimate.
Just before you succeed is a sucker move, isn't it? So
yeah.
Of course, yeah.
So he would have to, you'd have to follow it up with something really big.
Yeah. I don't know about this one.
All right, whatever.
I think he made a mistake, didn't he? And that's it.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you what. It's hard to say it is anything other than that. All right, moving on. David Blaine performed for a Washington D.C. restaurant. Went back to the kitchen where all the dishwashers and the waitstaff were. Performed for a while. Wound up making the blogs there in the district area. Now the mixologist there is creating a new cocktail. Coming soon, you'll be able to buy the Levitate, created in honor of David Blaine there in that Washington D.C. restaurant. But let me ask you this, Simon: what is the weirdest place you've ever performed in your career?
Well, I've performed in some pretty weird. I performed in a Hell's Angel clubhouse.
Okay.
Way back in the day when I was a kid, you know, about 17. That was kind of scary. And I performed for an audience in New Zealand at a festival where the audience were pretty much all naked.
Now why was it? Why were they naked?
Hot, and they were all kind of hippie sort of naturalist types, and there was, I don't know, maybe 1,000 people, or it was in a place called Punakaiki in the South Island of New Zealand, and I was headlining this festival, and I felt bad because I wore some shorts.
Yeah.
But I had to have somewhere to put my thumb tip, didn't I?
Of course. Well, I mean, there are other options, but I'm sure they'd be frighteningly unpleasant.
That was pretty weird. We had a wedding here in the House of Magic in the Haunted Cellar, and they wanted to get married naked. It wasn't a pretty sight. It was a druidic wedding.
Oh.
It was a ceremony. It was a kind of not an official wedding because, you know, oh, that was pretty weird.
Yeah, no, I think it would match some of the other horrors you have there at the House of Magic.
Yeah, they fitted in perfectly, but I didn't perform on that, but I think a couple of people wanted to.
Yeah, yeah. So what about you and naked? You just inspire nudity, Drake.
Oh, nakedness. It's one of those things, isn't it? I had a woman, I think I told you this before, I had a woman lie on the stage at Monkbury's, a nightclub in the West End here, and she was drunk, and she lied on the stage and just lied there shouting, "Make love to me."
Good Lord.
Yeah, and the security didn't take her away, and I'm looking at them going, "Get rid of her." And afterwards, I said, "What's the matter with you guys? Why didn't you take her away quicker?" They said, "We thought she was part of the act."
I thought the story was going to end, and then I just had to make love to her because they wouldn't take her away. That was just the only way to go about it.
Put her in the act.
What was that? Well,
then I gave her a job and put her in the act. No, I didn't. There you go. So, no, good old David performing in a kitchen.
Yeah, I know. Listen, there are in any news cycle, there are busy weeks and there are slow weeks. And that's why I had to bring you on, Simon,
okay.
Because I had to dress up the slow week.
Thank you.
I can't just have somebody boring on. This would be a horrible podcast.
For David Blaine, that's one of his more minor news stories, isn't it?
Yeah, no, he's kind of in the fallow period, you know, for him. Because
okay.
he has kind of like 1 year on and then 2 years off, where I'll be working on the special and, you know, now he's just kind of hanging around with his chick and, you know, going to restaurants, making blog fodder. David Copperfield is going against the grain in Las Vegas and is upping his Las Vegas show count. He's now going to 2 shows a night, 7 days a week through December, a time traditionally when a lot of shows take off because the season is over for, you know, the big traffic. Now, let me ask you this, Simon. Obviously, you run your own venue, the House of Magic, there in London, which we encourage everybody to go check out if they are in the area. But, you know, there was a worldwide recession. You know, did you feel it any at your place?
Oh, certainly, yeah. Certainly. The corporate work, I mean, we did a lot of work for banks here. That pretty much stopped. There's still some sectors spending money, the mobile phone market. We've had a couple of parties for insolvency practices, you know.
People really?
Liquidation.
Like bankruptcy and stuff?
They're doing fantastically well. insurance, I believe, still doing quite well. I mean, there's you know, we have had people, but the exclusive hires went down probably by half. If not a little more, because they certainly did. The interesting point, and this is something of a mystery to me, is that the public nights we do, which are now two a month, in December we do about five, but we did two Halloweens and two in September, I believe, they're selling really well.
Huh.
And these aren't cheap tickets. They're £70 and £90 a ticket.
Oh, wow.
And there is a whole six-hour evening, including dinner, and it's good food. It's not some crap hamburger, you know. And they're not a cheap ticket, but they're selling out, and they're selling out fast. And that's really interesting that people are they're spending money in small groups, like groups of 10 or 3 or 4 people or whatever it is, or small corporate groups will come in on these parties, but they're not spent. They don't want to be seen to be spending big money on exclusive hire.
Yeah. Now, I remember the last time we were talking, and this was before everything fell to pot, you know, economically, you were thinking about doing more public nights. Has that happened?
Well, that's what we've done. We've increased them because due to demand, but the other side of it has slowed down. But it happened after 9/11. Immediately after 9/11, things quietened down considerably. I don't know why, but they did. They basically stopped doing the corporate spending. They didn't stop, but it slowed down. Then it built up again, and then we had the credit crunch thing a year ago kicked in, and that killed it again. And now it's kind of slowly creeping up again.
So there we go. You're looking forward to the upswing.
It comes in cycles. I mean, I don't mind if I don't do another magic show. I really enjoy creating new stuff, and I don't live for applause. Let's put it that way. Good luck to David. I mean, two shows a night, 7 days a week. I couldn't think of anything worse. I feel like a battery chicken. You know what they call them in the States? You know, like a factory chicken. You're in a cage and you just got to lay eggs. And I mean, he loves to work like that, and that's his thing. We're exactly the same age, me and him, actually. Same year. And
really?
We're both 31 years old, you know.
Of course,
Just like sort of 20 years young. And we're the same age, and I don't have that kind of need to, you know, I'm nowhere near as rich as David, obviously. None of us are.
No.
You know, I'm comfortable. I don't really need to live to make money or to perform. You know, like creating new stuff is my kind of kick. That's what I enjoy, whether it's magic or the writing I've been doing or photography or all sorts of stuff. But it, you know, it's a strange thing, really, but that's him. That's good.
Absolutely. And while we're on the subject of David Copperfield, I do want to give a shout-out real quick to Chris Kenner, who is, of course, David Copperfield's right-hand man. And is, like, you know, within, like, days, expecting his first child with his lovely wife, Katie. So big shout-out to them.
Yeah.
All right.
I saw David when I was in February when I was in Vegas with amazing Jonathan. We went to see him.
So oh, you did?
Yeah. We chatted for a bit. Yeah, it's good. Nice to see him. He remembered me. He went, "Oh, yes, I'm a Drake, like the English version of me, but from hell."
Oh, there we go. Wow, I like. I mean, that's got to be a pretty cool description, right?
Yeah, well, it was very nice to be, I don't know. Yeah, maybe. It was nice to see him, though.
I mean, you wouldn't deny that. If I introduce you as the English version of David Copperfield, but from hell.
The English version of David Copperfield, but from hell. In any way, shape, or form.
Who knows what happens in hell, though? That's a big variable.
Yeah, I guess so.
All right, okay. Simon, you mentioned that you were in Las Vegas because you just did a whole big odyssey. Was that this year, right? All through the United States.
Well, that was a strange thing that came about. What happened is Bizarre Magazine, which is quite big in England and Europe. It does sell in America, but it's imported and it sells in like shops that sell tattoo magazines or something, you know, or motorbike magazines. It's not. It's more specialist. So it's not pornography, but as such. But it's kind of slightly racy, but it's certainly not porn.
Yes.
But it's an over 18 magazine.
That, by the way, is a great hook for it. Kind of racy, but certainly not porn.
Yeah. Well, it is, yeah. But, I mean, there's some gory stuff in it as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But they covered my venue a year and a half ago, and they actually paid me to have a model here doing 8 pages, including the cover shot of, you know, the life inside the House of Magic with this girl posing around. Fantastic shots. I mean, really excellent. They're on my website. You can see the article there.
What is your website again, just so people can look at this while you're talking?
housetomagic.co.uk.
Fantastic.
I got friendly with the art director. Really nice people, and they said they were here, and they said, look, we've been looking you up on the internet, we'd heard of you, but we didn't realise how much stuff you'd done. All these years you've done so much stuff. We want to add another 4 pages about you. Can we come back tomorrow and shoot it? And I went, sure. And so they came back, and they did another day here with me and interviewed me, and they added it. So it's a 12-page spread in all. I got friendly with those guys. They're really nice people, and they heard that in Halloween that Richard Garriott came to the venue because he called up. He'd just come back from space. He'd come over from Moscow to see the show, and he called up, and he came to see it, and we got friends, and he invited me to Austin to see his collection of automata and magic stuff. He's got some amazing magic stuff. Not a stack of it, but what he's got is incredible. I mean, he's got all the Houdan clocks, and, you know, I think Copperfield's got them all apart from one, so that Richard said, you know, he's quite lovely. He's got some lovely stuff there. And anyway, so I was planning to go over and see him, and David at Bizarre Magazine heard about that and they begged me to take a camera and ask him if it was okay if I take some pictures inside Britannia Manor, his castle there on the hill over Austin. And Garriott agreed, and so I got a little camera, and then I thought I'd go to Vegas to see Jonathan and Taylor and a few other friends there. And then the guys at Bizarre said, look, we've been dying for a story on Penn and Teller for years. We've never been able to get them. And I said, I'll ask Teller. And Teller agreed. And so what happened was, instead of going to Brazil for a couple of weeks to sit on the beach and the States for a couple of weeks for February for my holidays, I ended up being in the States for 4 weeks. And I visited 5 American states, came back with 13 features. I just loved it. I went mad, and I just did stories on all kinds of things. I mean, not just magicians, but collectors of automata, Marvin's Mechanical in Detroit, a guy called Sandy Lechick in L.A. who collects advertising stuff going back 150 years, you know, just amazing stuff, and just huge collections and all kinds of things. And it worked out really well. And I came back with my, you know, hard drive of pictures, and the editor looked through them and said, well, we're going to double the space, we're going to double the amount of pictures, and we're going to double the money.
Nice!
So now it's actually been a really good thing, and they've been publishing them since probably March, I think it is, every month, like 3 pages. The one I've done on Thomas Kunz, who's an automata builder, they've promised to do 5 pages on him. I think that'll be towards the end. And they want more, so I might do some more.
Are you going to come back out here and maybe do more stuff in Europe?
Well, this year, it turned into a year and a month of stories. It's called Simon Drake's Weird USA, and I think it'll be Weird Europe next.
Yeah,
and then I'll do Weird Far East.
So you're thinking trilogy. I like that.
I tell you, I really enjoyed it. I had the best. It was really hard work, but I had the best time. I mean, it just was great.
That's fantastic.
And I covered quite a few magicians. Danny Sylvester, his bit's already been out. And called Richard Garriott, who's a kind of magician. He did the only guy we know that's done a magic trick in space.
Absolutely.
Amazing Jonathan, that's his features out in the magazine that's just come out now, the issue. Teller was out a couple of months ago. And Gary Darwin and his collection of stuff in Vegas. A few magicians.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me just tell everybody this. Obviously, people in the UK, where this is kind of just more widely distributed, I'd say go get it immediately. Anybody in the United States, you got to see this amazing Jonathan feature. Just for the front picture alone, you will never be able to unsee this. All I'm going to say is amazing Jonathan in a bathtub, and that's really all you need to know going into it.
Oh, it was so funny because Jonathan's so fun. We went to the warehouse and did pictures with the girls from the show all around his cars and him, and I did pictures of him all over. And I said, come on, do some in your bath, because his bathroom's unbelievable. He's got a beautiful bathroom. And I said, so he's in the, I made him wear a silly hat and he's leaning over the bath. And then he has, you know, being a funny guy, he has a great idea to get his toaster and put a bagel in it. And so he sits in the bath with a fork trying to get a stuck bagel out of the toaster, and there's a big spark coming out. And that's the picture they printed. It's on the inside cover and on the article.
It is
but I
brilliant.
Did more, but they're great. Some of the shots are really funny, you know. But if anybody can't get hold of the magazine, then drop an email through my website, and we'll send you a secret website where the printed articles are.
So there we go.
It's a secret for you guys.
I know, for you guys. This is what we're doing, folks. We're giving you secrets.
You get something for free.
Yeah, exactly. Some might say a cabaret full of secrets.
Exactly. That's very funny. Yeah. I like it. So, there's other stuff in there that's great. It's good. It's an interesting magazine. I mean, there's some great pictures in there. Some crazy stuff. I'm just looking through the front of it now. I mean, there's a guy here who was a squatter in Holland, in Brussels, and they were trying to get him out of his house. So he dug a hole in his kitchen floor, sat in a chair, and cemented his right foot into the floor.
Good Lord.
And there's a photo, a great big full-page photo of him sitting there looking kind of, oh, okay, he's looking quite comfortable with a cushion on a chair because he's comfortable. He's got to sit there for a long time. And his foot is cemented into the floor. I mean, they can't exactly demolish the house now.
No.
So interesting. There's interesting little stories and pictures in this magazine. It's a good, bizarre is a good thing. It's kind of been around a while. It's published by Felix Dennis, who was one of the original editors of Oz magazine back in the 60s when you weren't even alive.
Oh, sweet Lord, no.
Oz magazine was a very famous hippie magazine that they had the big obscenity trial about because they, you know, they had nakedness in it and stuff. You know, he's a sort of pioneer publisher, Felix Dennis.
All right.
He publishes something like 60 magazines now, including... There are lots of computer things, and Maxim was his, and all that stuff. Anyway.
And he's also silly enough to be giving Simon Drake a bunch of money to go take pictures
of
silly things.
Really, I tell you, I haven't had much. I'm not that good at going on holiday and sitting on the beach and doing nothing. I kind of get bored. But this was just great fun, and I just went all over the place. And I found myself with a couple of days spare in L.A., and I just researched and looked for other things. I mean, Google's very helpful for these things.
As it turns out, right?
I was really looking for an old Hollywood starlet, you know, retired old actress who had a collection of dolls that I could put her on the floor with all the dolls around her and take a photo. I couldn't find one.
But you didn't have one in mind? You were just looking for a random aging starlet with a collection of dolls?
Yeah. I wanted a really, 90-year-old movie star, a woman, you know, who's retired and who collects dolls or something weird. I was looking for that kind of stuff, and I found some stuff like that. I mean, you helped me out. You got me Teller's details at the time.
Yeah,
thank you. And that was great.
Listen.
And the Teller feature was good. It was three pages on his house and him and chatting, and that was great.
I mean, anytime I can be any part of Simon Drake going and chronicling crazy stuff through America, I mean, I'm saying yes to that opportunity.
Good lad. Well, thank you.
All right, well, you also are part of the new Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus movie. It is already out in the United Kingdom. It comes out in the United States this December. But talk a little bit about, because I think you actually told me that you were involved in this
from the
record when we first recorded.
That's right. Well, I got a call in autumn of 2007 from Terry Gilliam saying, because I'd known him for many years, like 30 years maybe, nearly.
Yeah.
And he's been to the venue a couple of times with his family, and he phoned me up and he says, we've been speaking of effects people and all sorts, and no one can help me with this, and so I'm ringing you because you do the impossible. And I went, well, I hope I can help me. He had this problem. He said, we've got Heath Ledger starting the film, hanging from his neck under Blackfriars Bridge. We haul him up, the cast, you know, the other actors haul him up, resuscitate him, he comes back to life, and he spits out a brass tube 4 inches long out of his throat,
yeah,
which he quickly hides right? Because it's a secret. And this tube is the kind of linchpin of this whole film. The tube is a very important part of how the film begins and ends.
Yeah.
And so he said to me, I need to teach quite a few A-list actors how to regurgitate this tube. I need to know if it's really possible that it could save your life if you were hung. We need to do sleight of hand with them, have them multiply, have them appear, disappear. Can you help me? I said, sure. We went in, we had a meeting. There was a couple of other magic things. I made a whole lot of trial tubes, which I've got in a box in front of me here, and a couple from the film are sitting here still. And we made one telescopic one, quite nicely made one, and splitting ones, you know, like a bit like a multiplying billiard ball, but a bit smarter. Not just a shell, you know, a little bit more sophisticated, but they work well. But I don't think they made the picture. But they ended up with, it was a very difficult film because, as you all know, I mean, we were shooting in Christmas time, 2007.
Yeah.
Right in the middle of a busy season for me. So I had the actors mostly coming here in the afternoon and spending a couple of hours with me while I coached and various things. And who
did you work with?
Heath Ledger, I worked with a little bit on set, but he was very distant. He was kind of intense, that's how I put it. But nice guy, but, you know, intensely into the part. Because at that time, he was playing like a tramp in the film. He was like, he'd just been, he was sort of, you've got to see it. It's a great film. It's a real.
I plan on seeing it as soon as it comes out.
I thought someone had put some ass LSD in my drink. I mean, you had that weird feeling. It was the weirdest experience. And when you see it, it's very weird like that.
So I don't think anyone would expect anything less from a Terry Gilliam film.
Well, that's right, but it's one of his best. I've seen all his films. I think it's my favorite one. 12 Monkeys was great with Brad Pitt playing a lunatic. That was sensational.
Yeah.
And Fisher King was another favorite. But this is, I prefer it. I love this film. It's a great film. I had Christopher Plummer here, who's quite an old guy now. His, you know, sleight of hand stuff is hard to teach him because he's, you know, he's in his 80s. You know, he's an old guy. And he's not used to that stuff. But Andrew Garfield was a real... I mean, I've coached over the years probably a dozen movie stars for films over the years for things including Harvey Keitel and Oliver Reed. And Andrew Garfield is this young actor who I think steals the movie in a lot of ways. He's very good in it. And I have never coached anyone who's picked things up so quickly and worked so hard to become good. I mean, he learned to juggle for the film. You know, he was doing quite difficult moves, and not all of which end up in the film, because that's what films are like. But he was sensational. He was so quick and very, very good. Andrew Garfield, his name is. He's the kind of young male lead in it. And then I spent some time with Terry and taught him and the first assistant director some of the valuable moves, because I couldn't go to Canada where they were shooting the rest of it after they left here. And then they taught Jude Law and Colin Farrell to do the moves that I'd worked out. And we had this huge tragedy, of course, in early January. They stopped filming here. They wrapped in London, and everyone went off for Christmas. They all disappeared off for Christmas, and that's when Heath
passed away, of course.
And overdosed on prescription medication. And it was a terrible thing. And obviously, everyone was in shock. And it was really nasty. I mean, it was really unpleasant for Terry because they're very old friends. And Terry was very fond of him. And he was bitterly upset about it. And, you know, Terry was at one point sort of saying, maybe this isn't my curse, you know, because he's had so many disasters in feature films.
He's had a documentary made about, you know.
About a film
that never happened.
La Mancha, that's right. And he kind of thought that for a bit. And then everything stopped. So usually that doesn't happen in these situations. They have to carry on because there's a lot of money at stake. And everything was put on hold for probably a month. No one knew what was going to happen, whether the film was going to be carried on or whatever. And so we're just kind of like, don't know. So we waited, and Terry worked very closely with the scriptwriters and the producers to work out a way of doing it. And they basically, these three A-list actors, Farrell, Jude Law, and Johnny Depp, who were very good friends of Heath Ledger's, they did it as a tribute to Heath, you know, to help Terry out, because they all love him, because he's a good guy, and as a tribute to Heath Ledger. And in fact, Tom Cruise wanted to be one of the guys, but Terry didn't have Tom Cruise because he didn't know Heath Ledger.
Yeah.
You know, so, and when you see the film with these three actors all playing Heath's role, it really works. It's quite weird. And I remember Terry was saying that although I wasn't on the picture then, I'm still in touch with the people in the crew to a certain extent, and I know him. And he was saying that it was quite spooky, because Heath Ledger was still part of that film after he died, because what he'd done already in it was so good that it directed how the film turned out. So it dictated what Terry could and couldn't do. So it was almost like Heath Ledger was directing him. It was very odd, really.
Oh, that
and
is.
It worked, it's dedicated to Heath, to his memory, and it's a really beautiful thing in a lot of ways. It's a kind of, I'm glad that was, you know, if anyone's going to have a last movie, which is an awful thing to say anyway, I'm glad that was it and not the Batman film, which is amazing, but he is a very dark character, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and this is certainly, I mean, you've seen films like this, you know, kind of infamously, where, you know, actors have either gotten injured or in the case of, you know, so many, died, and
That's
they
right.
just turn out like messes, because, you know, movies are a relatively, you know, they are a certain way, you know, a script is locked down fairly early. You can't really monkey around with story much, but I guess I'm very, very glad to hear. Not only as...
Well, this was exactly, they don't mess with it much, apart from studios changing the ending, which is the famous sort of thing that happens.
Yeah.
The directors get pissed off about. But this was a one-off in that way, that it had to be completely restructured. After they had too much material, it was very difficult to abandon it, because they'd already committed so much to it.
Yeah, so they couldn't just reshoot it
in London. But the one, you know, the bit that I really regret, which was a shame, but that's just the way it is, was that I was destined to be coaching one of my heroes, who's a singer called Tom Waits.
Yeah.
Who's playing the devil in it. And the devil in the script smokes cigarettes continuously.
Okay.
Now, obviously, if you know Tom Waits' voice, you can tell he's been a smoker. Ironically, now he's given up smoking. So
why would you say that?
Yeah.
What about Tom Waits' voice?
He's been drinking. That's right. and he's on herbal cigarettes, which smell disgusting. But we'd worked out a whole lot of material. I said to Terry, I said, look, if the devil's smoking, then he shouldn't be smoking traditionally. He should be smoking in a very odd way, meaning he has one drag of a cigarette and he just flicks it away and another one appears, you know. But not using magic moves, but not using magic flourishes, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah.
Oh, God, there was probably about 15, 20 effects that Terry was so excited about that Tom wouldn't fly. Also, they had the schedule in Vancouver, which had been planned for some time. And so it was all set up for me to teach him on video conferencing, you know, or camera, you know,
okay.
Webcam.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the easy way of doing video conferencing now, webcam.
Of course.
And then when Heath died, all that flew by the wayside, because it was not exactly the most important part of the film.
Yeah.
The important part was to get the story done, and so unfortunately that never happened. But that was the real shame. But, you know, these things happen. But I worked out a whole lot of material for it, and it's quite some nice stuff, you know, simple things, but really devilish, you know, to do with just smoking a cigarette. And so some of them ended up in my act.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's awesome. Hopefully, you know, maybe Tom Waits. You can still at some point show him the moves.
Oh, I'd love to, but this is a one-off. It'll only happen once. But he's great in the film. He's just great. I mean, Plummer's great. They're all. It's really something else. And Vern Troyer's the little sort of tough little midget guy in it. You know, Vern, the mini me guy. You
of
know?
Course, of course. Yeah, who doesn't know Vern Troyer?
Everyone in it is just quite spectacular. It's a very strange film, but it's this. You'll see. There we are.
All right. Well, I'm looking for in limited release. The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus hits select cities December 25th in the United States. It is also playing at the Stars Denver Film Festival in November 22nd. So if people want to go see it then. But check that out. And I was excited to hear that you were working on it when you told me a while ago, or you had worked on it. And I am very excited to see it from what you've said.
It's a project I'm really proud to have been associated with and to have worked on. When we worked in London, fortunately, as I said, I wasn't on location that much. I was a bit, but it was so cold, and it was just the worst weather and the worst time of year. And they were shooting in, so one bit where David Blaine did the glass box trick next to Tower Bridge, and they shot a lot in a disused power station at Battersea, and it was in grim parts of London, you know. You can see it quite clearly in the film. It's towards the beginning, all the beginning stuff is the London stuff.
Gotcha.
But it is well worth seeing.
All right. Well, as we mentioned at the top of the story, a new report from ABC News says that autism can allow you to see through magic tricks, or at least that's what's intimated. And it drew a bit of a reaction, Simon, from some of the people specifically on Twitter, magicians on Twitter. Doug McKenzie, one of David Blaine's right-hand men, pointed out that the first example that they use for a kid seeing through a magic effect was completely incorrect. And Apollo Robbins, who was quoted in the story, echoed that sentiment. I will ask you, Simon, you mentioned before that it seems like a bit of an odd thing. Do you think it's harmful and let's assume that it's a wrong, that it's incorrect, that autism will allow you to see through magic tricks, to kind of put this on the plate in terms of people who want to, rehabilitate or help work with autistic kids?
Well, I think this is just clearly a news story. I mean, nothing more. I don't see the credibility in it if the example they used wasn't the secret of the trick. I mean, from my experience, people who I've known or come across in my life who've been autistic have often been actually very talented at something. And there's the film Rain Man is about that, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And they're often very, very good at something, quite often good at the either visual things or numbers or whatever it is. And it's, I don't know a lot about that kind of mental illness, but I think this is just a story.
Well, this is actually, the story is based on scientists Susanna Martinez-Conde and Stephen Macnick, who have wrote a book called Neuromagic and are seeking funding to begin research that magic can be used as a tool for the diagnosis and treatment of autism. So that's where it's coming. They got a new book out, and they're looking for funding to research this further. But I think it's kind of interesting that immediately it was the magicians that kind of jumped on it as being balls.
Yeah. I mean, I fundamentally am against exposing tricks. I don't think it's a great thing.
Yeah. Well, these guys didn't. The good news is that they tried to, at least even when they were trying to, they tried to expose a coin falling to a bottom of a sealed cup. And as is quoted, the kid said that people didn't see the slit in the piece of rubber.
Oh, they're talking about the speedy thing, the rubber thing. Oh, how funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's obviously not a slit in real nose.
No, it's not. Not at all.
That's a great thing, the dental dam trick. Yeah, it's a great thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember that when I was about 9, 7, or 8 years old. I mean, really young. I remember that. Yeah.
Well, there we go. And that about brings us to the end of the Magic Week in Review podcast. Simon, Drake, man, you're the best.
I think so.
You are.
That's very kind of you.
Listen, where can people, of course, House of Magic. .co.uk is where you can find more information on not only Simon, but also the house itself, which, now you guys are doing more public nights, so we highly encourage everybody to swing on by. And,
we've had lots of American visitors, and we welcome them with open arms.
Oh, of course. I'm glad to see we're welcome.
And if anyone's coming over, check the website, see if there's a public night scheduled, and, call up in advance and let us know you're here.
All right. Well, Simon, listen, anytime that you have anything to get out to the people, please, you hesitate in no way to get it to me as soon as possible.
That's very
right?
kind of you. Thank you.
All right. And that about wraps it up for this episode of the podcast. Remember, you can fire back on anything you heard at show@itricks.com. Until next week, I am editor Justin Robert Young, Justin R. Young on Twitter. Bang or gong.
itricks.com.